WFYI podcast brought to you by Bloomington, Indiana, an American college town offering food and drink, college sports, outdoor activities, live music, cool art, and good times daily. Everyone is welcome in Bloomington. More information at visitbloomington.com.
We're going to take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound.
Break it down. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. On this week's show, we'll celebrate the life and music of Greg Horn, a founding member of the legendary Indiana band Dow Jones and the Industrials. Horn passed away last week in Indianapolis. And we'll also have another edition of Rebel Music with Carla Lopez. This week, Carla's guest will be the union activist and political candidate, Jesse Brown. Dow Jones and the Industrials emerged from the Lafayette, Indiana music scene with an explosive fury during the late 1970s. The band's music mixed the primal urgency of punk music with the electronic experimentation of new wave. Dow Jones and the Industrials were led by the charismatic guitarist, sax player, and vocalist Greg Horn. And as I mentioned, Horn passed away in Indianapolis last week. For the next half hour, we'll celebrate the life and music of Greg Horn. I'll be sharing music from Dow Jones and the Industrials and Tonesent, an electronic music project Horn started in the early 1980s. I'll also be joined by the Indianapolis music great Wes Rutenberg, who will share his memories of performing with Horn. But first, let's hear two classic tracks from Dow Jones and the Industrials. From 1981, we'll hear the group's best-known release, Can't Stand the Midwest. And after that, we'll listen to It Ain't Good Enough, originally released in 1980 on the album Hoosier Hysteria, a split LP with the Bloomington punk band The Gizmos.
We'll be right back.
That was Dow Jones in the Industrials with It Ain't Good Enough, featuring Tim North on drums, Chris Clark on bass, Brad Garten, also known as Mr. Science, on keyboards, and Greg Horn on vocals and guitar. Greg Horn passed away last week in Indianapolis. Up next, we'll hear from the legendary Indianapolis musician Wes Rutenberg. He shared his memories of Greg Horn during a conversation we recorded earlier this week. Wes has performed with a wide range of bands, including the Zero Boys, the Pieces, United States 3, Antenna, Jot, the Lemonheads, and more. He also played a few gigs with Dow Jones and the Industrials, a band he credits as an early inspiration. Let's join my conversation with Wes Rutenberg. Wes, thank you for taking time to join us today to talk about the music of Greg Horn. I appreciate it.
A pleasure, Kyle. Good to be here.
Yeah. And, you know, you had a chance to perform with Dow Jones and the Industrials a couple times through the years, and I'm going to ask you about that. But first, yeah. I wanted to learn a bit more about the impact the music of Greg Horn had on you. And you wrote a very moving tribute to Greg in a social media post last week, and I want to quote from that statement now. You wrote, "When you live in an ugly place, one that largely rejects art, music, and culture, small heroes become gods. Dow Jones was proof you could run the other way, break all the rules, follow no one, and be truly great." You know, it's a very moving tribute to your friend. What was it about Greg's music that spoke so deeply to you?
I was really eloquent, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that really says it. And the one thing I wouldn't want it to be misconstrued is to say ugly and things that and mean I don't love my home. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is great. And what made me really appreciate it even more was knowing that this band was doing such inventive things and was so great. You know, at that age, my two favorite bands in town were the Gizmos and the Zero Boys. Zero Boys had just stopped playing. Gizmos had moved away, but I just thought they were great. And Dale and Paul talked about them as though they were mythic creatures, you know, these bands they had just been playing with. And, you know, they had a secretary on stage, lab coats, something in the liner notes I just read, Dale wrote that seemed like they were embracing and rejecting technology at once, you know. And we all felt that. I mean, I think we still all feel that. But as a kid, it was so important, you know, that we knew Kraftwerk and things were from other places where they didn't speak our language. But this was just right down the street. And it was super important. And to bring it up to now, it turned out that Greg himself was a true auteur. You know, he had he knew all about guitars. He knew all about records. He'd leave me messages at 4 a.m. That Actionstrasse record, it's really good. I'll tell you why. You know, and he would ask, why haven't you written a song today, or why haven't we written a song to together? Sorry, it gets to me a little bit, but somebody was really out there trying to always thinking about art. You know, I'm asleep, Dale's asleep, Paul's asleep, he's awake, wondering why we haven't written something more recently, or listening to one of our records and being obsessed with it and letting us know. You know, you'd wake up in the morning, there'd be this elaborate message from him, and you know, this is someone I didn't know him when I loved him the most as a musician. And now it went the other way. And he just became somebody who was, you know, a hot little mess, but really a big heart, you know, policed our aesthetic world and culture regularly to the people who knew him.
You mentioned people like Dale Lawrence from the Gizmos, Paul Mahern from the Zero Boys being influenced by the music of Dow Jones and the Industrials. They had a really unique sound. There was a really unique electronic music element that they brought to punk music, but it was still as hard and vital as any other punk music that was being made. What was it about their sound that was so groundbreaking and powerful?
Well, it's interesting. You know, these days we think of them as a punk band, but at the time they were a new wave band that played with a punk edge. Does that make sense? They were electronic. They almost didn't count as punk because they were aliens, in fact, you know, and not literally, but that's how we felt. And that's how they wanted us to feel. The record says on the back, produced by electronically superior beings, you know, there's no name. It's just like, you know, it's perfect. What was different about them was their artistic distance from you, the listener, you know, and that was somehow warm and fuzzy and felt good, you know. Besides the fact the bleeps and the blips and the guitars and the kind of strangely beautiful but a little bit primitive recording techniques, it's astounding how it's always both, you know. And that kind of is them in a nutshell, was that struggle between we're from the future, but we're sort of using the equipment from 10 years ago. I don't know. I don't know how to put it into words, but their uniqueness was what set a lot of us free and made us feel like, you know, you didn't have to just even form a cover band to fit in. You could do your own thing. And on that very same social media post you referenced earlier, a friend of mine who runs a record label in Australia, he's in a band called UMI, he got on there and said, over here we just worship that Can't Stand the Midwest. That's just great, right? I mean, that's I don't know, I think that's wonderful that they have to, there's this sort of even little underground of people who just love them for and have discovered them. And I say Dow Jones is they, but Greg Horn was a big part of them. And, you know, I want to kind of bring it back to him a little bit, because his personality had a lot to do with the personality of that band. And I believe that Chris Clark and Brad Garden would probably agree.
I want to go back to the social media post you made in tribute to Greg. In that post, you mentioned that during the 1990s, which was a time when the Dow Jones music was out of print, you were such a big fan of this group, you were essentially bootlegging their music and distributing it. Tell me about that. And why was that so important to you to share their music?
I think that it might have been, I think I wanted a CD of my own. And so I gave my records to Lon Paul. We were living together, 5201 North College. Go there and knock on the door. Just kidding. and I gave him my records, and he transferred it to the computer and meticulously leveled out all the, you know, did sort of a rough mastering of it. And he was very meticulous. No matter what gear he had, he would use it to the very top of its game. And ended up with a pretty good sounding CD, and I made a color little cover for it in the title page, and we made like 20 of them, and then we made 30, and then we just people just wanted them. I never thought to even sell them; just passed them out to people. I hate to call it a bootleg because I might have something to show for it, but we just made all these, and then they started being made by other people, and it went around, you know, and it was everything we had, even a few live things that I'm not sure are still floating around. It was a cassette. It had Never Too Stoned to Disco and a few other songs on it. But it meant so much. And everybody wanted it because we'd all heard it. A friend had one of the, you know, Hoosier Hysteria or the Can't Stand the Midwest EP. But nobody had everything, and nobody had a way to play it on CD back then, which was, of course, the way. So it was really out of necessity. It wasn't out of it. And love, just, you know. And then they came to town and in 2003 and played at Radio, and it was going to be their big reunion show. Everyone knew that Tim was really sick. Tim North, the drummer, invented the hover drum, which I don't understand, but that's what he invented. And he was going to come back from San Francisco, and they were going to play And he passed away from cancer right before the show, like 3 or 4 days before. And Lon Paul obsessively just stepped right in and played a perfect set with them. I wasn't in town. I was on tour with the Pieces. Didn't even see it. I seen a VHS copy of it. But that's what kind of fans we were, is that either of us at any time could simply play with that band because we knew exactly what the sounds needed to be.
And I want to ask you about that, Vess. You know, from what I understand, you played with Dow Jones a couple times, actually a few times, right? Tell me about your experiences playing with the band.
Well, the first time was a dream come true. The United States 3 in 1995 got asked by my good friend Nora Spitznagel to play at her parents' barn in Lafayette, and Dow Jones and the Industrials were going to reform and play. And as I recall, we showed up, we played, and then I think it was just Chris Clark and Tim North. I don't think Science came. I just don't have any recollection of him being here and being there, and I would have remembered all of his sounds. And Greg didn't come. So I was there with my guitar. I knew 3 or 4 songs. I knew USA and It Ain't Good Enough. I think I've learned a couple of others, and I just played with them because I wanted them to play, which is really how I get into bands, Kyle. That's how I got into the Zero Boys. I was trying to talk Paul into reforming the band, and he was like, well, why don't you play? And because they were having problems with Terry, and so I ended up in the band just so I could keep it going. But it might be a problem. But it was great. It was just because we wanted to play, and we literally played 4 or 5 songs, and then everyone went back to the barn party. But the later show for the record release, and do you know if that was 2017?
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah, I'm not sure the exact year.
There was 3 shows in a row, and Brad Garton couldn't make it, and Greg reached out to me and asked if I would be Science, and you know, I have a lab coat. I was ready to go. I had the Farfisa. I practiced in my living room like a maniac. You'd think I was going to be on the Grammys, you know, the way I obsessed over it. I just really wanted it to be right. You know, if Mr. Science walked into the room, I wanted him to be proud of what I was doing. So, you know, I did that, and it's not... You know, I don't want a pat on the back. I just wanted that band to play. I wanted everything to sound correct, and that was my motivation 100%. You know, I don't even remember if we made money. You know, so
what was that like playing with Greg on stage?
Oh, it was terrifying in a way, because if you've seen him on stage, he's on fire. He's like he's a very emotional person, and his emotions come out through that guitar, and they seem to make like shooting sounds as much as they make guitar sounds. And so it was thrilling. I was just, you know, I was listening as much as I was playing, because it was just one of my favorite bands. Hmm. But he is just the electricity. And it's like the rest of us were the wires and the sockets and the lights, and he was the electricity. He really, it sounds almost silly, but he really was the ignition of the thing. You know, he was very off script, but it never was wrong, and it never sounded bad, which is great, right? It's almost being jazz in the middle of a new wave band.
Greg was a unique person, from what I know. You know, over a period of years, I tried to get him to come down to the studio here to do an interview, and it just, you know, always went in circles, and I just, you know, respectfully understood that he was just a different kind of person. You know, a lot of the tributes I'm reading to him online use the word troubled to describe Greg. Is there anything you want to say about that aspect of his personality?
It's interesting. There's a lot of I don't want to say about that, but troubled is true. He was difficult. He didn't have an easy time of it. I think there might have been a brain problem at some point. He referred when we were rehearsing at one point. He said, "If I seem really angry all of a sudden, it's because of the surgery that I had, and my brain is a little messed up. And I don't know what that meant. I don't know what that was about, but that was accurate. It just, sometimes you would wonder, oh, maybe I should be going, you know, and then he'd be right back to normal and be real sweet and everything. And he was definitely someone who lived on the edge of reality. He was up at night. He probably experimented with various things that weren't food. And that was sort of part of his lifestyle and his, I don't know. It's really just that he was very different, and it was more about that. But he really cared, and he cared so much about music, and he cared so much about the equipment and the mic placements, and those things were things that kept him up at night, and in a way that made some of the rest of us sleep more soundly. And that's what we lost.
Invest, you mentioned a friend or colleague in Australia talking about the importance of Greg's music in their continent. You know, Dow Jones and the Industrials, Can't Stand the Midwest. This is an international anthem among fans of punk music. Any final thoughts you want to share on the legacy of Greg Horn and the legacy of Dow Jones and the Industrials?
Well, that is the legacy. That is a perfect legacy. A band with this beautiful recording, playing this aggressive, melodic song with strange sounds in it about their terrible experience here and making it great. I mean, how much better? That's it right there. That's all I think any of us are trying to say, is you can make an anthem you want to sing along with about the place that you're kind of irritated with. You know?
Absolutely. And Vess, I can't thank you enough for taking time to share your memories of Greg. Is there a final Dow Jones track you would want to leave us with?
Yes. Remember Your Manners. It's a later Dow Jones song. I think it has Jenny Sweeney singing on it. If I'm not, I could be wrong, so someone should correct me out there. But that's the one I'd like to hear on the radio.
Awesome. Thank you, Vess.
Thank you, Kyle. You keep it up, please.
Okay. This is Dow Jones and the Industrials with Remember Your Manners.
Yeah.
That was Dow Jones and the Industrials with Remember Your Manners. The band's guitarist, vocalist, and saxophonist, Greg Horn, passed away last week in Indianapolis. Up next, we'll hear two more classic tracks from Dow Jones and the Industrials. From 1980, we'll listen to Set Yourself on Fire and What's the Difference? That was Dow Jones and the Industrials with What's the Difference? You can find that song and all the music recorded by Dow Jones and the Industrials on a 2016 compilation titled Can't Stand the Midwest, 1979 to 1981. And we're celebrating the life and music of the band's guitarist and vocalist, Greg Horn. He passed away in Indianapolis last week. The original incarnation of Dow Jones and the Industrials lasted from 1979 to 1981. After the demise of the band in 1981, Greg Horn co-founded Toneset, a minimalist electronic music project that made extensive use of samples. Over the years, the music of Toneset has gained a significant cult following. In 2016, a 5-album box set of the group's music was released in Germany. That collection was titled Such Heavy Conviction, Recordings, 1981 to 1983. And we'll listen to 2 tracks from that anthology now. This is Toneset with Life is Busy and Travis.
She heard something fly over and then come down.
Fly over here? From where?
From up there. An unidentified flying object.
Unidentified flying object? Nothing's come down from up there except snow.
Unidentified flying object.
Travis Walton abducted by a UFO.
Evidence is here. Our planet is indeed being visited by intelligences greater than man's. They travel in spaceships, in flying saucers.
We call them UFOs.
That was Tonesett with Travis. And we've been celebrating the life and music of the Indiana music legend Greg Horn. He passed away last week in Indianapolis. Cultural Manifesto will return after this short break. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. Up next, we have another edition of Rebel Music with Carla Lopez.
This is Carla Lopez, and you're listening to Rebel Music on Cultural Manifesto. Me llamo Carla Lopez, y estás escuchando a Música Rebelde, el Manifesto Cultural. Rebel Music explores the relationship between music and activism in Indiana and around the globe. My guest this week is the community activist and political candidate, Jesse Brown. Jesse's work has focused on supporting unions and elevating the voice of working people. He's been an activist in the socialist movement, and he's currently running for a seat in the Indianapolis City County Council. Let's join my conversation with Jesse Brown. Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Hi, Carla. I'm doing great. How are you?
Thank you so much for being here today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to listen to some music and talk about your work as a community activist.
Awesome.
A lot of the work that you do is centered around supporting unions and elevating the voice of working people.
That's right.
You care so much about this that you were willing to put your own body on the line. You were intentionally arrested at a sit-in supporting hotel workers. Why are you so passionate about this work?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think I could talk for an hour about it, but in the interest of time, you know, the way I was raised, I was always taught to look after those who society is not valuing as well as they should be. And I think that'll come clear in the music choices we're going to talk about today. But when people are working hard trying to support their families and aren't getting a break, you know, I was arrested, but that meant I had zip ties put on my hand. I got to ride around in a paddy wagon for a few hours, mm-hmm. and then I got released. Mm-hmm. It has not impacted my career. It was a pretty easy sacrifice for me to make, but it got to add emphasis to what the hotel workers were already doing when trying to fight for a union. I ended up working in a hotel myself later on, trying to work further for that goal. 9 months doing that, working third shifts and second shifts. Did not end up winning the union there, mm-hmm. but still was worth the fight. And yeah, just wherever people are working to improve their community and improve their lives and their families' lives, I think that's some of the most valuable work that individuals can do. And I always am behind them 100%.
Continuing on the subject of unions and workers' rights in America, the Socialist Party really led the fight for workers' rights in the 20th century. Socialists also fought for women's rights and civil rights in the United States. You've been an activist in the socialist movement. You're a former officer of the Central Indiana Democratic Socialist of America. What role has socialism played in your work?
This will sound really dorky, but honestly, this is the way that my faith lives itself out in the world. You know, again, you'll see in my music choices here in a moment, but you know, the parts of the Bible that always really spoke to me were the Beatitudes and, you know, Jesus's direct message that the people who are in prison, that's the people you should be concerned about. The people who are oppressed, who are in poverty, who are downtrodden, those should be central to how we're living our lives and how we're helping each other. And I think that's something that tracks one for one with socialism. And so I don't think it's kind of like that old phrase there, but by the grace of God, go I. I've been very lucky. You know, I'm a white heterosexual cis man in the United States. And so I was born with so many advantages. And, you know, my father went to prison for selling heroin. He's also been in and out of mental institutions. So it's not like I've had the most privileged life out of everyone I know, but I still can count the blessings and never stop counting, right? And so from my perspective, solidarity is the most important verb form of love, right? It means standing behind the people who need help. And if you have resources, use it to help others. And so, yeah, that's just kind of seems natural to me and just a part of kind of my central ethics.
And as we've been discussing, you have a long history of being an activist. Now you're running for a seat with the Indianapolis City Council. What made you decide to go from being an activist to running for office?
That's a really good question. It was something I never thought I would do. I've always kind of had my own opinions about politicians, and I know there's a lot of self-aggrandizement that goes on, et cetera. But really, I was knocking a lot of doors last year to help Victoria Garcia Wilburn win the only seat that flipped red to blue in a contested district in the State House, which I was really proud of. You know, went out there just as a volunteer for, I think, 7 Saturdays, called up a bunch of volunteers, got them to knock doors with me. And it was such a narrow race that I can count the number of people I talked to who said they switched votes because of me. And I know that I made a real difference in making that happen. And then it's not like it was super easy, but it was also way, way easier than I thought. I grew up in Indiana, and so Hamilton County district going blue seemed just way outside the realm of possibility. Mm-hmm. And then I realized a lot more was possible. So when I look at the turnout in Marion County, you know, we see all these horrific bills coming through the legislature this year, and it seems like local Democratic leaders have given up on ever challenging state Republicans' power. Destiny Wells would be our Secretary of State right now if Marion County turnout was at the level it was at in 2018. Mm. So it was literally just because of where Democrats have a supermajority but didn't do enough to turn people out and motivate people. That's why we have this Republican supermajority continuing. So I realized if I can do something, I must do something. We can't just settle for the same thing that I've had for a decade now. Life expectancy has gotten lower for my nephews who live in my zip code over the course of time that I've lived for 15 years in my house. That's unacceptable, and we have to treat it like the urgent crisis it is. I wasn't getting that energy from the current counselors, and so I decided I'm going to run a progressive socialist campaign. And if I win, that's amazing. I'm happy to sit in the council. And even just running, I want to bring these issues into light and let everyone start talking about them.
Mm. So you brought some songs to share with us. And music has been a big part of the movement for civil rights and workers' rights in America. What role does music play in your life? And does it help shape your political ideas?
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. So I've always loved music. And for me, music is a way of regulating my emotions and my moods, and also in coming together with other people in solidarity. So I sang in my church choir at Little Flower in my neighborhood for several years. I always enjoyed singing as a kid. You can ask anybody, ask my wife. I'm constantly singing annoying little limericks and songs I compose as I speak. It's just a way for me to express emotions, get myself calmed down, or sing along with other people and participatory, mood lifting in that way.
And the first song that you brought to share is a very historic song in the fight for union rights. And this song has been attributed to the songwriter Joe Hill.
That's right.
The song is Power in a Union by Uta Phillips. Tell us about this song.
Absolutely. So it was written by Joe Hill, who was a kind of singer-songwriter associated with the Industrial Workers of the World. And the IWW, for anyone who doesn't know, really fascinating history. There's an old documentary from the 70s called The Wobblies. It's worth looking into. Super cool people. But they were people who just believed that regular working people working together, you didn't need an official trained union organizer with a degree in order to come and make things better at your job. It was just you and your friend and the person working next to you on the line just together holding hands and saying, you know what, we deserve better than this and we can get better than this. So this song, like many of Joe Hill's songs, was an old church song. And he was kind of like the political Weird Al Yankovic of his time, where he would just take new words that had a political message and play them over an old hymnal. And so that way everyone knew the tune. It was really easy for new people to start singing along. And it broke down this dichotomy between the singer and the listeners, and everyone participated together. So I love this Utah Phillips version as well.
This is Power in a Union by Utah Phillips.
Yeah, I start to preach, but anyway, that's what I feel about it. There is power in the union. This is Joe Hill's best song. I'll teach it to you. Would you have freedom from wage slavery? Then come join the grand industrial band. Oh, would you from hunger and... Tell me how this song goes, damn it. I know this song as well as I know my palm of my hand. But like I say, get a little fuzzy around the edge. Would you from misery and hunger be free? Come on, do your share, lend a hand. And there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. And that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. There is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. That's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. Try it out. And there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. And that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. Oh, would you have mansions of gold in the sky and live in a shack that's away in the back? Would you have wings up in heaven to fly and starve here with rags on your back? But there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. And that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. Now, if you like sluggers to beat in your head, don't organize, all union despise. If you want nothing before you are dead, shake hands with your boss and look wise. But there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. And that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. Then come all ye workers from every land and come join the grand industrial band. Then we our share of this earth shall demand. Come on, do your share, lend a hand. For there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. And that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. Power in the union.
I'm Carla Lopez Owens, and you're listening to Rebel Music on Cultural Manifesto. We just heard Power in a Union by Utah Phillips, as selected by my guest this week, Jesse Brown. Let's return to our conversation. And the second song that you chose is Man in Black by Johnny Cash. In this song, Cash talks about the struggles of working people and how he honors those struggles in the choice of clothes that he wears. Why did you pick this song, and what does it mean to you?
Frankly, I just love Johnny Cash, and he's just really fun and cool to listen to. I love that he broke down a lot of these kind of boundaries and barriers. You know, I'm a big Rage Against the Machine fan, too, and that was originally on my short list. And I was like, well, Rage is kind of one note and very, you know, like open, lefty, etc. Johnny Cash, I don't think, falls very well into those same political categories. You know, he was a conservative guy, a country artist in a lot of ways, but he believed in taking care of everybody and in centering the lives of the people who had it worst in our society. One thing I think is really interesting and cool about this song, among all the like the poor and the beaten down and all the other categories of people he mentions, he also talks about people who were drug addicts. And, you know, he calls them reckless, but he still says he wears black in their honor and in their memory. And it's tragic that people came into this. And I think that's missing a lot of our political discourse today, is that you don't have to pretend like a person is perfect to deserve love, respect, solidarity, and support. You can make a mistake. That shouldn't be the end of your life. And so I find that message really inspiring.
This is Man in Black by Johnny Cash.
Well, you wonder why I always dress in black, why you never see bright colors on my back, and why does my appearance seem to have a somber tone? Well, there's a reason for the things that I have on. I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down, living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the time. I wear the black for those who've never read or listened to the words that Jesus said about the road to happiness through love and charity. Why, you think he's talking straight to you and me? Well, we're doing mighty fine, I do suppose, in our streak of lightning cars and fancy clothes. But just so we're reminded of the ones who are held back, up front there ought to be a man in black. I wear it for the sick and lonely old, for the reckless ones whose bad trip left them cold. I wear the black in mourning for the lives that could have been. Each week we lose 100 fine young men. And I wear it for the thousands who have died, believing that the Lord was on their side. I wear it for another 100,000 who have died, believing that we all were on their side. Things that never will be right, I know, and things need changing everywhere you go. But till we start to make a move to make a few things right, you'll never see me wear a suit of white. Oh, I'd love to wear a rainbow every day and tell the world that everything's okay. But I'll try to carry off a little darkness on my back till things are brighter. I'm the man in black.
We just heard Man in Black by Johnny Cash. That song was selected by my guest this week, Jesse Brown. Let's return to our conversation. Jesse, you told me that it's important to remain optimistic even when things are tough. And you picked this song to express this sentiment, Lovely Day, by the legendary soul singer Bill Withers. Tell us more about that.
This song, for whatever reason, as soon as the first chords start playing, I just can't help but smile. It's just a little goofy, a little corny, but still very sincere. And, you know, I just think any song where you hold a note for as long as he does, a lovely day, it just goes on and on. Like, I crack up every time I try to sing along because it's just so over the top. And I love it. And, you know, my uncle is a vocal coach. And one thing he said about songs like this with those long extended notes is it forces you to start breathing more deeply. So I know if I'm starting to feel a little panicked, a little bit stressed, maybe before this interview, for one example, I can just listen to that song and sing along, and it forces me to take those deep breaths and really center myself, realize it's all going to be okay. All trial and tribulation is temporary. We're going to get through it.
This is Bill Withers with Lovely Day.
when I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
I'm Carla Lopez Owens, and you're listening to Rebel Music on Cultural Manifesto. We just heard Lovely Day by Bill Withers, as selected by my guest this week, Jesse Brown. Let's return to our conversation. Jesse, thank you so much for being here with us today and having this conversation with me. If our listeners wanted to learn more about you and the work that you're doing, they can reach you at jesse@jesseforindy.com.
That's right, or my website is just jesseforindy.com.
Okay, thank you so much again for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
My guest this week has been the community activist and political candidate, Jesse Brown. Stay tuned for future editions of Rebel Music on Cultural Manifesto.
That's all the time we have for this week. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Kyle Long, and you've been listening to Cultural Manifesto.